Or it's John Waite next with the Monkees, the group, really. And in half an hour, Sean Curran reports on exchanges in the Commons as an MP names the footballer at the centre of the row about privacy injunctions. MPs also hear the results of an inquiry into the murder of a lawyer in Northern Ireland in 1999 and delays to an IT system for the NHS in England leave a select committee fuming. Today in Parliament in half an hour. Now, as the 60s boy band The Monkees have been touring the UK to celebrate their 45th anniversary, John Waite goes back down memory lane, or rather, a busy Californian street corner.
In the summer of 1970, I was standing on a street corner here in downtown Los Angeles with my thumb up and my hopes low, trying to hitch a ride. I remember standing on this corner for what seemed like hours, just with a rucksack, with a forlorn little Union Jack on the front, as if that would make any difference, and the cars roared past very much as they are today. Until, that is, a rather large and sleek Cadillac pulled up, and from the depths came a voice which said, "I could never pass a British flag. Get in."
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees.
The driver, mop top of hair and twinkly grin, looked familiar. My God, I thought it's Davy Jones. Then lead heartthrob of the Monkees, the world's first manufactured boy band whose records and TV series were a sensation.
The combination of the music and the series together put them into this realm where in 1967 they charted 3 number one albums here in the United States and they outsold the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
Every little kid loved the Monkees. They were amazing actors. I mean, there was really nothing like it on TV.
And here I was in 1970, sitting in a Cadillac convertible, a megastar at the wheel, he from Manchester, me a student there, chatting about home. And then he goes and invites me to stay at his Hollywood home.
Well, this is Franklin Avenue, which runs parallel with Sunset Boulevard. And this is where Davy lived when I came to stay. And now I'm going to see if I can retrace the house. I wrote the number of his house down in my little address book. 8571. Oh, there's 6871 over there. Oh, so we've got quite a distance to go.
Davy had arrived in America aged just 15 to play the Artful Dodger in the Broadway version of the hit Brit import Oliver.
I'd do anything.
With early training as a jockey and credits on Coronation Street and several Radio 4 plays behind him, Davy was already building a promising career. Then he and fellow cast members appeared on that now legendary edition of The Ed Sullivan Show. The night, 73 million Americans tuned in to watch the Beatles' first US performance. Davy couldn't have known it, but his future and the Fab Four were going to be linked.
I don't think that you can have a Monkees really without the Beatles.
Andrew Sandoval, Monkees biographer and reissue producer.
I know that Bob Rafelson, who created the show, had the concept for the Monkees long before he ever saw the Beatles, but it was the success of the Beatles and Hard Day's Night that made it possible for him to market it to a television network and bring it to life.
So basically they were after that sort of wacky, improvised Lords of Misrule, really, isn't it?
Right, a total irreverence.
Producers Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider were really aspiring movie makers who saw television as a way of funding their film ambitions. They placed an ad in the Hollywood trade papers asking for 4 insane boys aged 17 to 21, and more than 400 replied.
The auditions took place in about November of 1965 in Hollywood, California. Not come in and give us a song, more tests to unnerve the applicants and sort of see if they would do stuff off the cuff that would be interesting. I think they were really looking for personalities.
My name is Michael Blessing.
Shortlisted candidates were invited back to film screen tests on the set of a popular sitcom, The Farmer's Daughter.
That's what this is my real name.
To the delight of monkey wannabe Mike Nesmith.
Wow! Are you ready for this?
As the former child star of primetime TV show Circus Boy, Mickey Dolenz had a private audition for the show. Davy Jones also came through the back door. Already under contract to Columbia Pictures, studio execs were looking for a vehicle for their cute, clean-cut protégé.
Hey, Davy, let me ask, what bag are you in?
What?
What bag are you in?
Bag? Yeah. I don't get that.
All right, let me ask you something. I mean, like, do you make a folk sound or a rock sound or anything like that?
I make a terrible sound, Davy.
Photographer and musician Henry Diltz remembers all sorts of hopefuls going to the audition.
Stephen Stills went down, and they liked him. He was a great musician, a good-looking guy, but he had one tooth that was recessed a little bit on the side. You might call it a snaggle tooth. And that bothered them, and he said, well, look, I'll send my roommate around. You might like him, and that was Peter Tork.
So many people showed up for this audition that people started saying everybody in the world was there. You know, Charles Manson was there, and this person was there. In fact, Manson was actually behind bars at the time.
After audience feedback, the final lineup was confirmed. Musicians Mike Nesmith.
Oh, really? That's just great.
And Peter Tork.
That's us.
With actors Mickey Dolenz.
Hey, you're putting us on.
And Davy Jones.
You must be joking.
Well, finding Franklin has been a great deal harder than I thought. I hadn't realised that actually Franklin Avenue splits into two, and this is the remote bit. Oh, crikey, this is a steep hill. I'll just knock on the door, I suppose. Hello.
Hello, hi.
My name is John Waite. I'm from the BBC,
right.
And about 40 years ago, I stayed here in this house. At the time, there was somebody very famous living here. Did you know that?
Yes, I know. I've been told about it. It was Davy Jones from the Monkees.
I haven't been in here for 40 years.
Absolutely. Please come in.
Ah, yes. Now, I do remember this. We've come into, I suppose you could call it the lounge. I remember coming in here and everyone was rather surprised. His wife was there, his little daughter, and they looked up this scruffy hitchhiker. What on earth has Davy brought home this time? And it was me. May we go out onto your patio, because the view is marvellous, and it's so wonderful to see it from there.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Look at this. I remember this little place here where we gathered in the evenings, barbecues and things. Other members of the Monkees came over, Mickey Dolenz, his wife Samantha. So there would have been some very famous people in that main room of yours.
I am sure. The rock and roll of the time.
What do the neighbours say about Davy Jones?
I know they used to put on top of the garage a big sign saying, Davy John is out, he's not here. Like this, he wouldn't be bothered by all the media.
And did you like the Monkees' music yourself?
Oh, I loved it. Oh, yeah, it was my time and I knew all their songs. Yeah.
What do I do?
I don't know, man, but don't do it again.
In 1965, 5 years before my visit, Davy's heartthrob days were in their salad stage.
She's divine. Lovely.
Four strong personalities had to be moulded into a convincing band, apparently sharing a house and getting into scrapes while looking for ever more ingenious ways to earn some money. And while the boys were schooled in improvisation, songwriter Bobby Hart and his late partner Tommy Boyce set about creating the Monkey sound.
We knew what the flavor was. We didn't want to rip off Beatles, but we knew it could be Beatlesque and probably should be Beatlesque.
Paperback Writer.
I was pulling into my driveway. I heard just the fade out of Paperback Writer, but I thought he was singing Take the Last something.
I see.
So the next day I heard it, and it of course had nothing to do with trains. And so I said, that's the title, let's take the last train to Jerome, Cottonwood, Clarkdale. How about Clarksville?
Clarksville became the Monkees' first single, released before the TV show aired in America and reaching number one soon after. Take the last train to Clarksville. In those early days, studio musicians recorded the music, with the Monkees simply adding their voices later. But the pre-Fab Four, as they were dubbed, still needed to look like a real band. Hank Sicalo was their studio engineer.
All of the boys were supposed to play an instrument. Davy was supposed to play bass. I don't know if he took any lessons or not, but that didn't work.
He stayed with the tambourine, didn't he, or the maracas?
We had what they call a toy box in the studio all the time. Tambourines and maracas, all those kind of things. Well, he played those great. He had great sense of time.
Michael Nesmith was always a very dominant character, and he had probably the most experience in playing guitar, so he asserted himself into that role.
Andrew Sandoval.
Peter Tork was not as dominant, but was incredibly musical, so he decided on the bass, and they knew they wanted Davey out front. And then Mickey, it's just strange how he ended up on the drums, but I think he thought that it was more of an acting challenge than anything else, and he became quite a good drummer, quite an original drummer as well.
Even the prolific songwriting talents of Boyce and Hart couldn't come up with enough hits to fill an entire series in time for broadcast. So Columbia Studios called in the Golden Ear, the legendary head of its music division, Don Kirshner, a man with an uncanny knack of spotting hit records. Hank Cicallo.
Suddenly there were all these famous writers from New York, Carole King, Jeff Barry, Neil Diamond. Donnie was famous for putting these writers together because he had been so involved in their careers in New York, and he was very intuitive about songs.
I'm telling you, that guy's tough. He even wears a pinstripe suit.
What's so tough about that?
It's got real pins in it.
Well, this is Sunset Gower Studios. On Sunset Boulevard, there's been a studio here since the 1920s. Today, it's where they're filming the TV shows Heroes and Dexter. But nearly 40 years ago, this is the place where many of the 58 episodes of the Monkees TV series were shot.
A normal day for the Monkees in 66 or 67 would have began at about 6 or 7 a.m. in for makeup, and then starting to shoot these scenes. And then they would add in a couple of song numbers, which would be like a precursor to the music video. And they would also use stock footage of random scenes that they would cut in. It was a very complex program for something that was seen as a kid's show.
Going down to the set each day was just so much fun.
Either they'd be out on a country road somewhere with cows, or they'd be on a set with a sheik and harem girls, and you never knew what it was going to be.
But great for you as a photographer.
Well, it was, yeah.
Henry Diltz was a musician who got into photography as a hobby. He went on to become one of the world's foremost music photographers. Originally sent to cover a typical day on set for a teenage magazine, Diltz ended up becoming the official Monkees photographer.
As soon as the first scene would be over, Mickey would say, "Come on, man, we had this little routine where we'd climb up the ladder that went up about three stories to the top where they had the lights hanging, and we'd have a little toque of grass and look down at all the people, you know, walking around on the set. And then I'd climb down the ladder. And then Davy Jones would come up and say, "Hey, man, you want to get high in my dressing room?" And I'd say, "Sure," you know.
So you were stoned the whole time.
Yeah, basically. In short. Yeah.
Well, the cupboard's bare, and it's not about to get any fuller unless we play a gig.
Do you know we haven't worked in a month?
Gee, it seems more like 4 weeks.
The first episode of the Monkees TV show aired on September 12, 1966, exactly a year after the ad for four insane young boys had appeared in the press.
Will you please look under harmonica? H-A-R-M. Look, it's a country. There is so.
Irreverent, zany, and full of visual trickery, the show went on to win two Emmy Awards for Outstanding Comedy Series and Direction.
I guess I should have stayed in bed.
Some of its original fans still remember the show's impact. Jeff Geringer and Leslie Zimmer.
It was just good, wholesome, crazy fun.
This just doesn't seem to be my day.
They had no authority figure. So it was just four guys kind of doing whatever they wanted and playing some great music.
It gave us a chance to just enjoy something that was so amazing for my age group at the time.
These were the only four guys that could have pulled this off.
Songwriter Bobby Hart.
Four charismatic guys, cast well, and they gave us two great voices. They gave us Davy Jones, and one of the best voices of the pop world in the 60s was Mickey Dolenz.
I thought love was only true and fair.
Did it bother you at all, as it seemed to bother the critics, that they weren't schooled musicians? At least two of them weren't.
Well, not at all, because it was cast as a television show. Now, the fact that they had the foresight to also sign them as actual artists and make records with them and send them on the road, I mean, that was genius right there.
Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer.
The first album went straight to number one. Monkey Mania was making millions, at least for those in charge. The whole operation was tightly managed, with the boys kept away from the press, and hit picker Don Kirshner assuming ever more musical control.
They talked Neil Diamond into giving up his next single, I'm a Believer, because they could get a Monkees cut, and the Monkees were so hot, and they'd done 10 million sales on the first album. Of course, Neil Diamond couldn't do that at that stage in his career.
And it was the biggest-selling single of the Monkees' career. But disquiet was growing in the Monkee camp. And when the second album was released without the band even having heard or seen it, Mike Nesmith called an angry meeting with Don Kirshner, demanding more creative control for the band.
Mike got a little annoyed that he could not be actually in there doing it. And he was a good musician and he wanted to play, and it was hard to handle that.
Seems reminiscent of Beatlemania. Thousands of kids going crazy to get near them. I think they've all gone monkey nuts.
1967 was a whirlwind year for the band as they saw their success spread worldwide. They produced a hat-trick of number one albums and filmed a second television series. And somehow they also found time to visit Europe and Canada and mobbed everywhere they went, perform a long U.S. summer tour.
What they lacked in refinement, they made up for in exuberance.
Monkees biographer Andrew Sandoval.
They would burst onto stage through speaker cabinets or appear with the first ever rear projection of film from their television show behind them.
Engineer Hank Sakala worked on the tour.
The stage manager will have various vehicles waiting.
Thank you. Good night.
You come off stage and they would dive into the ambulance and the ambulance would go. There was one night when we were in the limo and of course the crowd let out. So they assumed that we were the Monkees. So they started jumping on the car, and I kept yelling at the driver, who was petrified, get us out of here. So we got to the airport, and the guys were all standing there waiting for us, and they started laughing because the limo was totaled. It was awful.
So you had a tiny taste of what they had to go through.
That was enough of a taste. From then on, when they left, I left.
Okay, let's go.
Lerna Loy, Harry James, the band leader, Gene Roddenberry, and here is the Monkees. They may have got onto the Hollywood Walk of Fame, but what they never did was get into the American Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I think it was their intense rise to stardom that had people sort of looking for an angle to pull them apart, and they were very easily pulled apart because there was this new counterculture that was looking at music as a serious communicator of ideas. And the Monkees took a lot of this to heart with the criticism because I think they all genuinely wanted to express themselves and be a part of the youth movement, but they just didn't have a way to do it.
The 6 o'clock alarm would never ring.
Well, here I am. It's been a long journey, 40 years and, well, 10,000 miles on this trip to go to the West Coast, and now down into Pennsylvania where Davy lives now. This is a very little town called Beaver Town. Yeah, I think it's this big old clapperboard house here. Horses everywhere. Okay, so let's go meet Davy Jones for a trip down memory lane. See if he remembers me. He is expecting me, I hope. To the porch door. Oh, little bell. Hello?
Hello, come in.
Davy.
Hello.
Hi, John Waite. Where are you? Hello.
Don't look any different. You haven't aged a bit.
Oh, you are so kind. You look terrific.
What do you mean I haven't grown?
So how long have you lived here?
I've had this house since 1987.
And what brought you here? Because it is a bit out of the way, isn't it?
I just like it, you know. It gives me a chance to escape from that image that people see and just recharge my batteries.
You can just be ordinary.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've always been ordinary. Come inside anyway and have a look.
All over Davy's rambling house were mementos of the good times. Posters, souvenirs, boxes of memorabilia destined for a museum. But even when I'd been that dishevelled hitchhiker with a crumpled Union Jack riding in his limousine with its top down, among all the adulation and the gold discs, I was to learn from Davy even then that the fairy tale had lost its luster. Although at the time it seemed pretty glistening to me.
I am surprised you do remember that.
Of course I remember. I remember everything that's different in my life.
It's one of those things I'll never forget, obviously. You know, you're picked up by some Hollywood star, and here we are together 40 years later.
Well, I thought about it a couple of times, and, you know, maybe it was me inviting home into my home And maybe that's what the flag meant to me. It always means to me. You see, I got the flag here. Yeah. And I thought, well, hey, you know, you guys, you're English, you've got to be good.
But, I mean, you can imagine what it was like for me. I mean, because you were so famous.
See, I don't get that. You see, it's the same for me or me talking about you. You know what I mean?
It's not quite the same, Davey,
no,
I don't think.
In a sense, it is.
Let me just tell you. So we're in your Cadillac and we're driving along on one of the freeways and all these beautiful Californian girls are buzzing around. Of course, they see you at the wheel of your car. And I remember one in particular in a Beetle nearly drove off the road when she saw you. And they all came swarming over to drive alongside us. And you said to me, do you like any of them? Make a date with them. Well, hang on. Now, you say there's no difference. That doesn't happen to me in Britain.
No, I don't actually. No, I'm just, that was being a lad, really. Honestly, I am so naive when it comes to all that.
I think you were just being very hospitable. On that subject, you know, when we got to your home, I didn't know about these seismic events that were going on, that the Monkees were splitting up, that there was a lot of criticism. And you said to me how unhappy you were about what was happening. And the Monkees had made an enormous amount of money, and not much of it had come the four of your way.
We made $400 a week for 2 years. Yeah. Saying that, in 1967, my first royalty check was $240,000. I bought my father a house, I bought my sisters each a car, and that was it.
So what went wrong?
Mike Nesmith, he was the gangster. He never was part of the band. He was always doing his own thing, even when we were recording and doing stuff. Ah, I don't care. I want to do this song, I'm going to do that song. And I was just looking at it as another part, another play.
You went along with it?
Yes. I'm not a director, I'm not a producer. I could be now, and I will be eventually.
Now why don't you two guys shake hands and be friends?
The Four Kings of Emile sitting.
It was a poignant reunion for me, seeing the icon of an era that had passed four decades ago. Mike Nesmith's frustration had eventually led to a split with their musical godfather Don Kirshner, and so they did get to play their own instruments and write some songs for their third and fourth albums. The Monkees weren't the only ones getting bored on the assembly line.
Hey, hey, we are the Monkees. You know we love to please. A manufactured image with no philosophies.
Their manufacturers, Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider, now had more than enough money to move on and to fund their first film project, Head, a collaboration with Jack Nicholson. Although Davey and Co. starred in the film, it was too bizarre for their usual audience, and indeed pretty well any audiences at the time.
The money's in, we're made of tin, we're here to give you...
When the Monkees movie came out, I couldn't see it because it was rated M, 17 or older.
Fan Jeff Geringer was typical of those who didn't get it.
But when the album came out, I remember sitting in my room crying, going, what happened to the Monkees? What is this?
Even looking at today, it's hard to understand and almost implausible that the Monkees went through with this. I think that they were looking for an escape as well. It was just to do anything that wasn't exactly like their television show, or to lampoon aspects of their rise to fame, but in such an inside way that it was like one great big inside joke that only Bob Rafelson, Bert Schneider, and possibly at times the Monkees got, or maybe the joke was on the Monkees.
Ironically, Head is now a cult classic and paved the way for more collaborations between Rafelson, Schneider, and Nicholson in the form of Easy Rider and Five Easy Pieces. But it was the beginning of the end for the Monkees. Peter Tork was the first to leave, and when their contracts were not renewed, the band just fizzled out and wouldn't perform as a group again for many years to come.
Hey, fellas, this is not going to work out. We better get some help.
To that bright summer's day.
So anyways, there's another one. Let me see what else.
As I stood in Davey's kitchen listening to him sing along to his latest album on his portable CD player, I was thinking of a remark he'd let slip when, just once, the smile strained. Sometimes, he told me, I'm just a lonely, frightened old man. And often, we returned in our talk to that happy Mancunian home which he'd left 50 years ago as a young teenager.
And you get your gun. Within the heart of me. My dad used to sing this to my mum. Shut up, Harry. Oh, would you just shut up?
Too soon.
But I love you, Doris. I love you.
But Davy Jones has no need to be lonely. He still has legions of fans and regularly beats the likes of David Cassidy and Zac Efron to top the list of all-time teen idols. He has a close relationship with his family in England and his four daughters, and he remarried only recently. He's in demand for concerts and tours and is busy renovating a beautiful old church near his home.
Hey, come on, guys. This is Regal. He's the oldest member of the family. Then we got Whiskey B and Weekend in Devon. I'll just let them out.
The jockey has now become the trainer.
Those two mares are in foal.
He may have a 12-year-old car, he told me, but he's got a 2-year-old thoroughbred.
They're going to be the key to my success in England.
Right.
I'm going to go back and get what's rightfully mine.
And what's rightfully yours?
Number one, to be right. Champion.
Although dismissed all those years ago as a manufactured musician, Davey believes he's come a long way since. And he's a winner who can still make a comeback from the rails.
I love McCartney and I love Elton John. I sing just as well as they do. I've now learnt to sing and just concentrate on that. I talked to the agent when he called me, said they want you on Dancing with the Stars. I said, I'm not going to do it. I says, but when Paul McCartney and Mick Jagger do it, give me a call. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't need to do more than I'm doing.
What do you think of as your greatest achievement? Is it the horses? Is it the family life? Is it the monkeys? Because that was enough fame and fortune for anybody in a lifetime.
I think it's the crossover. When somebody says to me, I've been a fan of yours for a long time. I saw you on Broadway. You were the Artful Dodger. I saw you on Scooby-Doo. Saw you on the Brady Bunch. You know, now it's going to be I saw you on SpongeBob.
You've always appeared as yourself. You've always been Davy Jones, haven't you?
No, I have not. And I'll tell you why. The Monkees ruined my acting career. What I should have done after the Monkees finished in 1970 is I should have either gone back to the stables or I should have gone to England and joined the Young Vic just to establish myself.
In fact, the Monkees did reform, making more money than ever before. When MTV marked the show's 20th anniversary with a weekend of back-to-back Monkees episodes in 1986, a whole new generation of fans was born. The Monkees had 7 albums in the charts simultaneously and went out on the road again. Jeff Geringer was there.
When they came to the Greek Theater here in Los Angeles, it was the first time in 19 years that they had been on stage as a foursome. They did their bows, and they linked arms, and they used to do what was called the Monkees Walk. You know, they put one foot in front of the other, and I started getting all choked up. And I went, where did this emotion come from? And then I started looking back and realized that I have a career in radio. The reason I'm in radio is because I had to listen to the radio to hear my Monkees. My hobby is music. My very first record was the Monkees album. So much of what I had become was right back to the Monkees. And so that emotion of finally seeing them do this Monkees Walk that my friends and I used to imitate when I was 6, 7, and 8 just all came flooding back to me. Another pleasant valley
Sunday. In what they call the showbiz firmament, the Monkees may well have been shooting stars, but through reruns, reissues, and reunions, quite a bit of their light still twinkles.
Excuse me, are the Monkees in here?
The Monkees did have a real impact. They didn't change fashion or hairstyles like the Beatles did, and they didn't change the way we look at religion or sex.
Well, nobody's perfect.
But they made a lot of people happy.
Did you see any monkees?
See what?
Monkees, monkees! Really, Russell, old boy, you've been hitting a booster.
Catching up with one of those stars on my personal journey, it wasn't like he'd fallen. He wasn't bitter anymore about the breakup. Hey, he's a monkey. They're too busy singing to put anybody down.
It's time to go, man. Yeah.
Here We Come was presented by John Waite and produced by Deborah Dudgeon. It was a Whistledown production for BBC Radio 4.
Wake up to news and comment on BBC Radio 4.
Good morning, this is Today with Sarah Montague and Justin Webb.
The headlines this morning. Syria's violence...
What's more, if you miss something or simply want to hear it again...
Sorry, I need to end this.
Can I tell you what is not civilised, then? Can I... The answer to that was no, I couldn't, because she hung up and that was the end of the interview.
You can listen again online by going to bbc.co.uk/today.
Well, now we go to West...